Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. I'm excited to be joined tonight by Melinda from the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Melinda.
Thank you, Michael. Very nice to be here.
Great to have you on the air.
And I understand that we're going to be talking a little bit about the fabulous retreat that ended, I think it was last Friday, at Santa Sabina.
That is correct. Yeah. I want to hear all about it.
Yeah, well, it was truly stunning. And I'm hoping that everybody will rush to their calendars and mark the time from after Christmas to just after New Year's for 2009-2010, because I think we're going to do our darndest to have a repeat performance.
Wonderful. So for those who weren't there, what did they miss?
Well, Santa Sabina is a big retreat center run by the Dominican Sisters. It's in San Rafael, California, which is in somewhat famous Marin County. And Santa Sabina Center is right next to the Dominican University campus. And the neighborhood is just gorgeous. It's surprisingly to me very quiet. It's almost as quiet as a monastery, which is pretty amazing to be
in. Yes.
Relatively urban area.
Yes.
And it has some really, really nice walks up to an area where you can see, I think it's about a 360 of the Bay Area. So you can see the Bay and the ocean and Mount Tamalpais, which is one of Marin County's landmarks.
Yes.
And the retreat itself was it was a really, you know, we talk so much about Sangha events, and this was truly, seemed to me, a Sangha event. There were, I think, something between 45 and 50 people there.
Yes.
Ranging from folks who had never done anything with us to folks like you and me who have been around for decades or more.
Yes.
And it's just so special. Because we're all there for all of us.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that anybody would have felt left out or left behind.
Yes.
Because it was so, as all our events are, it was so inclusive.
Yes.
And we had marvelous food, and it was not a working meditation retreat in the way that many of our retreats are, and the way Carmel has been traditionally when we've done our New Year's retreat at Carmel.
Yes.
So the only work was washing our dishes, and then for folks who had been around for a while, there was kind of a rotation so that the sort of everyday maintenance jobs were covered.
Yes.
And I projected that was a, you know, it was a lovely way to participate. It wasn't like having to do chores.
Yes.
Yeah.
And somebody was doing an awful lot of cooking.
Somebody was definitely doing a lot of cooking.
Or several people were doing an awful lot of cooking.
Yeah, in very large pots.
Yes.
And Santa Sabina is set up to do large retreats, so they have a kitchen with, I don't know how many burners that stove had, but there's a couple of ovens, and there's a real, restaurant-style dishwasher. So all of those things that could be kind of a drag were, I thought, quite fun.
Yes.
And we had yoga every day, and folks got to have a one-on-one guidance session with Sherry, which is not to be missed.
Yes, true privilege.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Can't really describe it. You have to be there and have one to know what's there for you.
Yes. To me, it reminded me of retreats I've been on before, and kind of multiplied several times over.
Yeah, in many ways.
Yes.
In terms of all that food and all those people.
Yes.
But also all of the benefits.
Yes.
it seemed to me. Santa Sabina is an old building and very quiet and very comfortable, as old buildings often are. The Dominicans are a contemplative order, and there were various things around by Mary Oliver and by Thomas Merton. And it's just, that's sort of the spirit of it.
Yes.
So we fit in rather nicely.
Yes, I felt very much at home there.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, I think one of the folks who runs the place commented that they had never had a group as quiet as we are.
Wow.
Even though all the groups there are in silence, we just sort of out-silenced the
Raise the bar.
Yeah, raise the bar.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, to me, like you were saying, it was a beautiful location, and I mean, I knew at some level that I was close to a city, small city, because I had driven through there, and yet when I went out to walk around, as you said, we were so close to nature, and those beautiful eucalyptus groves were right there.
Yeah, and as we drove in the first day, we were preceded by a pair of deer that just sort of trotted very nonchalantly down the road in front of us. So it was, and that was actually on a street called Deer Park Avenue. Terribly appropriate.
Yes, yes. And it sounds like there are plans to be there for next year's New Year's.
That's the rumor that I hear, and that's why I would, you know, along with the bridge walk, I'd encourage people to get their calendars marked. Because it really is just a really wonderful event. And to do New Year's together,
yes.
to welcome in the new year by sitting with a lot of other folks who are doing the practice and, you know, to have that sort of set the intention for the coming year by the way that we leave the old one and enter the new one.
Yes, yes. And for me, in terms of going on retreats, that I find it really helpful, as with all aspects of practice, when it becomes a very regular event and there's not a lot of conversation about signing up for the next thing. To me, it reinforces that commitment to practice, which really supports the one inside who does want to wake up.
Yeah, that's such a good point, that making that commitment well ahead of time. When your heart knows that's what you want to do before conditioning and get in there and say, oh, but, you know, friends down the street are having a real party. And for me, the way I feel afterwards on New Year's Day is so contrasts so deeply with the way I remember many years ago feeling after one of those, you know, very fine parties. It's just that it didn't... the effects weren't quite as peaceful and long-lasting.
Yes. So to those who came, thank you.
Yes.
And to those who will join us next year, welcome.
Yep. Yes.
Great. Thank you, Melinda, for joining us tonight.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Michael. It's a subject very close to my heart.
Oh, great.
All righty.
Take care.
Uh-huh, you too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air. Tonight we have the privilege of being joined by Monk Dave, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, Michael.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm recovering from a little bit of a cold. But otherwise, I'm doing great. I'm actually one of the people who sort of missed out on what sounds like the fabulous experience that Melinda was describing. It was fun to hear that it was so good, because you don't really know. You know, you're just kind of down there walking around. But I ended up having to spend most of the retreat behind here with a cold, hanging out with the dogs. But they did let me come down for the last couple of days and kind of pitch in.
Oh, good. So you were able to experience some of the place and the people there.
Yeah, and I had, of course, in my own little way, I had the same experience as Melinda. There's something about sitting with a lot of people that is kind of magical. even though the place, like the what we set up there, what they set up there, I didn't help out at all. At the meditation hall, you know, it's a big room. It's not made for sitting Zen style. So we had to kind of, as we generally do, make it up. You know, we hang sheets over tables and stuff to make a white wall to sit in front of on parts of the room and, you know, stuff like that. But you walk in there and you see 50 people all meditating together in silence. And I don't know, there's just something that's really, really powerful about that. And being one of those people in particular, you know, going to finding your place in the hall, sitting down, knowing that, you know, for the next half hour, you're all just going to sit. And the support that's in that is pretty incredible.
Yes, yes, it is. And I was just thinking as you were talking, sort of the projection aspect of that for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I can feel sometimes when I sit by myself that perhaps the commitment is not as deep as I would like.
Uh-huh.
And when I sit with a whole group of people like that, it feels like that part who is committed feels more supported.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's tough, you know, out trying to sit on your own and do this practice. You know, as we talk about all the time, it's a really challenging practice. You know, it's challenging because it works. What works about it is that it requires us to go beyond suffering. And, you know, most of us are deeply addicted to suffering and hang on to it and don't want to let go for anything. And so, you know, you're out there on your own in the world where nobody, it seems like, really kind of gets that. And most of the people that you're hanging around don't really have that same intention. And a lot of people just, you know, when you talk to them about it, just look at it and say, what are you talking about? You know, but so to try to maintain practice in that kind of environment is definitely doable and possible. There's thousands at this point of people associated with this practice who are out there doing it.
Yes.
But it really is good occasionally to come together with other people who are trying to do the same thing. And like you say, supporting that kind of commitment and just kind of getting it that this is something that is true and real and valuable for a lot of people and brings an enormous amount of meaning to people's lives. And just to be able to be with other people in their experience of practice really is something kind of special.
It is special. I agree. It's a great privilege. Dave, I have a big list of callers here.
Oh, okay. Great. Well, let's just dive right in then.
Okay, great. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi. My name is Freddie.
Hey, Freddie.
How you doing?
Good.
I had a quick content scenario and any guidance I would appreciate. I've been kind of hopping around doing the same type of work but at different places, and what happens is that I kind of ostracize myself from my coworkers that I don't work with kind of in the same area. I'm okay with the people I work with, you know, side by side. But as far as lunchroom stuff like that, I don't go to that type of stuff because I am shy.
I see.
And
so
then
let me make sure I understand. So you've got the people who you're spend time with and are interacting with all the time. That's fine. But like
yes.
in a larger situation, like the lunchroom situation, or maybe some kind of larger context, you tend to kind of isolate yourself.
Most definitely. So people I don't rub shoulders with or have really anything. Any contact with, you know, on a regular basis, it's something that I struggle with if I see them, you know, in the hallways or at work or what have you. And so, and what happens, conditioning, you know, takes that. And for me, now that I'm doing this work a little bit, understand projection and that I project onto those people, I don't go there. So they think this and this and this about me.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I see that, but so what I would do is, I don't fit in here, and, you know, I'd stay there, you know, for a certain amount of time. As far as staff meetings go, those would be, you know, horrific for me to attend because of projection and me taking that personally. And so I would often call in sick for staff meetings. I basically, if I wasn't just in my little area with people that I felt comfortable around, I was really – I mean, I was suffering dramatically. And
yeah.
So
it's tricky, isn't it? Because it seems like, you know, like you call in sick, for example, it seems like what you're doing is you're avoiding the other people who are causing you to feel this way.
Yes.
But when you bring in the element of projection, it becomes pretty clear, isn't it, that that's not what's going on at all. You're trying to avoid what is happening really inside your own mind.
Exactly. And so, and what I would do is I was like, okay, this is not working out from here. You know, I'll go to, you know, a different, a similar type of a job, but, you know, things will be different. I'll do things differently. But what I found out that, you know, I've done that 3 or 4 times now, and I, you know, you bring everything with you, which I know now, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I'm kind of going through the same thing now where I finally found, or I'm not sure who's talking here, but I found a, where I can work where it's a smaller group and there's not the expectation of this larger group I really don't have contact with, and I have to meet with them and feel all this, you know, discomfort. You know, or, you know, stay and ride this out. And I'm concerned, I don't want to give up because I, you know, a lot of things I read where you just kind of, it's good to find kind of this discomfort so you can work through it. But, you know, it's been a really painful, you know, thing in my life to kind of, I'm still going through this right now.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
I kind of see it out some, you know, somewhat. I know that it's, this conditioning is not going to end, but at least I don't have that social stuff on a daily basis at work to deal with, because like I said, I'll be with a small group, which I'm okay with, but I kind of feel like I'm giving up on myself if I do that, because I have something that I need to work through here, but it's been so painful, like I said, that I'm not sure if I want to, you know, hang in there and work this out when there's someone I think of right now as an alternative that does not include a lot of suffering.
Yeah. It sounds really painful. I mean, what you're describing really is living with self-hatred. Do you,
mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
That way
yes.
We talk about things? Yeah. So this entity, however you might want to think about that, that really does hate you, and it's kind of going along with you in your life. And in your case, it's sort of using outside people to express itself. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
sort of disguising itself as these other people and what they might be thinking and stuff. But really what's going on is you're just kind of getting beaten up inside your own head.
Yes.
Now, let me make sure I understand something just about the content of it. Are you saying you're facing a choice now between this new, a different situation that we might say your conditioning likes better because
mm-hmm.
it won't bring up these kind of issues quite so much, and a situation that's not so comfortable that you're in, or have you already moved?
Well, I could stay, right, and kind of try to work through this. Which has been extremely painful, you know, for me, you know, for the past 6 years, really. Or, you know, I could do this other job, like I said, where, you know, I'm still doing primarily the same thing, but I'm not part of this huge, you know, workforce that I'm going to have to meet with, you know, on a weekly basis and kind of face, you know, basically all of my conditioning. But that to me, it's what I've always done, but this is the first job that I have where I'm only going to have that small group to work with. I'm not going to be expected to meet with, you know, a lot of people I don't know on a regular basis, which is what I struggle with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't want to get, but now doing this work, it's kind of like I've been moving and moving and moving, but each job I moved to, there was nothing physically different about the job. It was still a large group and all that. And I just, you know, I was like, I had listening to conditioning saying, you know, well, you know, you'll be different this time. But I know that's not true now, and so
yeah. Well, and
that's a
critical piece of information to have, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You know,
afraid I'm doing it right now, though. Again, even though I know that this job that I'm looking at right now is definitely different than what I've kind of the jumping around to the same exact situation as I've done before.
Right. Well, I think I can reassure you on that account. You actually said this just a minute ago yourself. Is you know, you'll take it with you. So even though, you know, it might be that this new situation is, at this point, seems like it'll be maybe a little bit easier for you. Maybe it will to some degree. But I can pretty much guarantee you that wherever you go, I mean, this thing is not going to end.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you'll find some way to suffer over it. We have, you know, this happens constantly at the monastery. You know, people have this idea that they're coming to the monastery and it's going to be peaceful.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be... You know, I'm getting away from all this stuff. I'm getting away from my family. I'm getting away from these excruciating job situations that I'm in over and over again. I don't have to face all this stuff that comes up in a relationship. But then, of course, they come here, and there's only, you know, just a small handful of us. But it's amazing how quickly all that same stuff will get recreated just using next to nothing.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah. So on the content part of it, you know, who really knows? Probably what will happen is you're going to be paying a lot of attention. Sounds like you already have been paying a lot of attention. And you're going to be, you know, doing the best you can to make the kindest, most compassionate decision you can make for yourself. And that will result in something. Either you stay or you go. But in some ways, you know, in terms of the practice and the process that you're doing, you know, it really doesn't matter all that much.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I'm still going to be working on the same thing regardless if I stay or go.
I really think you will. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, my experience of making decisions like that is, you know, we don't even really make decisions. We just kind of, we're kind of going along, you know, we think we're making decisions, but actually what happens is life happens and we respond to it. And then we take whatever conditioning that we've got into that new situation, and we're dealing with that as best we can.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I had this opportunity last year as well, for kind of the same opportunity to choose to go to this new type of position, and I decided to stay.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, as soon as I decided to stay, I kind of felt better at first. But you know, when I started going back to work, you know, it was this conditioning, self-hatred, saying, what did you do? You know, but I'm really not sure, you know, where this information is coming from, as far as if it's, you know, from a centered place or, you know, or from self-hatred. But I guess the thing is, there's just no perfect decision. I think, you know.
It's really true. Well, in a way you could say there's no perfect decision. In another way you could say every decision is a perfect decision. You know, because it really doesn't matter. You know, it's one of the most fundamental ploys that conditioning has. You know, it says that the outside of you matters. You know, it really matters that you do this and not that, or you do this and not that. You know, it says you've got to make the right decision, because
mm-hmm.
all of your internal experience is dependent on that. You know, that's what we're all raised to believe that. You know, if you don't like what's going on, change it, and that's how you change your inner experience. And like you say, it does work to a certain degree. Because, you know,
mm-hmm.
you make a decision and you feel better for a second, because at least you've made a decision and you feel like you're in control a little bit. And, you know, for a little while it seems like things are going to be different, but it never really is, because all the baggage that we're carrying around just follows us right into whatever the next situation is.
It always catches up to us. So.
It really does.
It does. And something that I get at work is, you know, when I am out of my work area, you know, if people I don't see much, oh, we never see you, you know, what are you doing? Why aren't you hanging around us?
Yeah.
And, you know, I totally just, you know, shrink up. I definitely identify with a very young sub-personality. And so, you know, that just brings on, it just compounds the stress for me.
Yeah, of course.
And so,
well, it's even worse than that, because I bet you anything that you're like a large group of people magnet. Do you ever feel that way?
A little bit, yeah.
It's like you can't avoid those kind of situations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
in a way that you can't really explain. No, that's kind of how karma works. You know, it's like, you know, if that's your issue, then your life, for this kind of mysterious reason, is just going to hit you with every kind of situation it can until you're willing to take the kind of steps that you're beginning to take and see if you can actually end the suffering in it, rather than trying to continually adjust the circumstances to try to avoid the pain that's in those kind of situations for you.
Most definitely. And then just kind of asking about like family members growing up, and people have always said that I've always been, you know, a large group of people, very, you know, shy and reserved. And then I have a voice that says, well, if that's the way you are, then why don't you work in a smaller setting? And so you're not going to have, you know, this to deal with on a daily basis. But then again, the part of me who really wants to be free, and if I do go into a large group setting, wants to be able to function, you know, from center, or at least weather the storm, and not be kind of, you know, hindering myself, I guess.
Yeah. Well, what I would suggest to you is that you don't worry about that too much.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you can sense it, but conditioning's got you stuck in a duality. There.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so you probably know, it sounds like you're kind of real familiar with this kind of stuff, that, you know, the nature of duality is to cause you to suffer. I mean, that's the point. The point, you know, it seems like the point is to make the right decision, but it isn't. You know, the point is to make you suffer. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so what I would suggest instead is turn your attention away from that decision, trusting that, like we were talking about a minute ago, that decision will make itself at some point, and whatever happens will be fine. You know, you know how to survive in the situation you're in now. The other one might be better, might be worse. Who knows? You haven't really tried it. But,
exactly.
You'll just to trust that's going to be fine, and instead turn your attention to how it's doing it to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how it's causing you to suffer, as you have been. You know, recognizing that this is a process. This is something that happens over and over and over again. It's been with you ever since you were about knee high, probably, and it's a way that just over and over and over again, conditioning uses your life force to create suffering in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. So, and then as far as kind of interactions at work, you know, I just need from, you know, meditating and reading, I just need to, you know, not plan anything and just when someone says something to me, I, you know, just try to count the breaths and just see what happens and see what I say. And so that's something that, you know, I'm trying to incorporate, but it's definitely hard because I feel like I'm dealing with not just my conditioning, but their condition as well as, you know, why isn't this person, you know, basically part of the group? And so I'm getting their projections as well. And
yeah,
so,
well, it is hard. I mean, you're hitting practice at kind of the highest level, you know, with interacting with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it could take a while to really experience yourself differently in these kinds of situations.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, it might not. But what I hope for you is that you'll, as you go through this, you'll sort of either develop or kind of find yourself in a kind of a spirit of, how to say it, like experimentation with it, or even with a little bit of excitement that goes along with it. So instead of having it, you know, what condition is going to try to do with everything, with your interactions with people, it's going to try to do the same thing with that as it's doing with this the larger decision about where you're going to work. It's going to try to get you focused on the stuff outside. You know, what you said, what they said, did you do it right, did you not do it right, did you do it better than you did before or worse than you did before? Do you know what I mean? Stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if the more that you practice, I think what you'll find is the more you'll be able to not believe that that's necessary. You know, that it's necessary to actually have your focus of attention outside, being concerned about what's going on out there, and more you'll find kind of the courage and willingness to let that go. Again, just trusting it's going to be all right and turning your attention inside instead.
Mm-hmm.
There's a nice thing about practice. One of the many things that I enjoy most about it is that, you know, we really don't, well, stuff like this, we really don't have to worry about it all that much. You know, there's just this really basic practice that says, when my attention wanders away from the present moment, I just recognize that whenever I do, and just without any self-hate, without any judgment, without feeling bad about myself for, you know, for wandering away, just bring my attention back here to the moment. And we've got lots of good tools for that. You know, we follow the breath, we pay attention to body sensations, you know, we take a look and see what the emotions are doing in the body. You know, you can really be in the senses, too. You know, see what are you seeing with your eyes? What are you feeling with your, like in your body and your clothes? What are you smelling? Stuff like that. And that really basic practice of bringing the attention back over and over and over again serves us in every context. It's that is the practice. That, and you might say that's all of the practice. So, like, let's say you're at work. Here's a situation that normally causes you a lot of angst. You know, suddenly there's these people there. You find yourself going into that little small part of you that you were talking about before. And what you are training yourself to do is to pull your attention out of conditioned mind, all of the meaning that it's making about it, all the judgment that's happening, all the self-hate that's riding on that judgment, just waiting for another opportunity to beat you up and just bringing you back here. And then, you know, here to the moment. And then the magic is that as you do that, you find out that you're different than you ever thought you were. Who knows, you know, say you're a shy person. Who knows what's going on with that? You know, it could be that what that means is you're just really perceptive. And you realize as a child that you're just really perceptive and that you were kind of seeing things that other people weren't seeing. It could be that that's just a sort of a conditioned response that's come with the beating from self-hatred, you know? But you start to take those elements out of it, take that, you know, unplug from that self-hate a little bit, unplug from all that necessity to be the right person and to kind of gauge your your well-being according to what's going on the outside. Also, letting go of the strategy to try to make yourself comfortable by arranging things on the outside. And who knows what kind of person you'll find that you are in the middle of all that.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. All right. Yeah, definitely some things I will look at.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I appreciate it.
Oh, you're quite welcome. I appreciate you calling too. It's a good situation to be in. You know, what's good about it is having that understanding that it's a process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you had. I mean, that having that piece of information, oh my gosh. I don't know if you're a person who ever listens to the news, but I've been listening to the news every once in a while lately, and that is the thing that's missing.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Nobody gets that. Nobody knows that they're doing a process, and that's why they feel the way they feel. And without that knowledge, you know, there's wars and disasters and hatred and all this kind of crazy stuff that's going on. You know, to have that piece of information is, to me, it's just about the most valuable thing a person can have.
Yeah. No, it's definitely been helpful to understand that really anything on the outside that I'm going to do is not going to result in a lot of change inside. So with the situation. So no, I appreciate it, and I will definitely look into that stuff. So thank you very much.
Okay, good. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us, Freddie. You're listening to Open Air. Today we have the privilege of being joined by Dave, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Dave, I'm always inspired by people who call in, and I sense really practicing and a lot of skill and a lot of willingness, and it's very supportive to me.
Yeah, I am too. I was thinking about that myself right as Freddie hung up, because, you know, it's easy to walk around through the world. You know, I don't get out all that much, as you know, but every once in a while I do, and, you know, walking around and seeing the people there and seeing things that people are doing, I always wonder, what's going on with people? You know, what's going on in their minds as they're going around? And it is really comforting to know that there are people all over the place out there who are really paying attention and attention and suffering, because that's what we need. You know, that's what all of us need. In a way, it's like taking the discussion we were having earlier about you know, the support and the sangha that happened at the retreat recently, and broadening it out. You know, even sitting here wherever I might sit in my house, or, you know, whatever but places where I sit, and recognizing that at that moment, all over the world, people are doing that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I actually am connected, that we all are connected in this intention that really a lot of people share, and people are doing, as you say, just tremendous, courageous work all over the place.
Yes, yes. And I was just imagining that I could walk around and think, oh, is that Freddie? Oh, is that guy Freddie?
Uh-huh.
Maybe they're all practicing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a special privilege for us too here, because, you know, we, as I'm sure just about everybody knows who's listening to the program, you know, we function as a retreat center as well as a monastery here. So we have quite a few people come through at the monastery, and we get to know them, you know, when they're here. And in this kind of environment, it's, you know, pretty usually people show up with their kind of in the world persona. You know, it's kind of like they're wearing it like their clothes.
Yes.
You know, here's who I am and here's who I need to be, but you don't have to do that here, and people get it pretty quickly. And then as that falls away and people relax and they get here and they realize that they can express themselves from the heart rather than kind of being defended and expressing themselves through their conditioning, you get to see just really how beautiful everyone is.
Yes.
Without an exception. And then, you know, people go. And then every once in a while, especially on the radio program, you know, somebody will call on the radio program who I haven't seen in a while, and they're talking about the practice they're doing. It's like, yes! You know, it's just so great that they're out there doing it, even though we haven't seen them. It's just,
yes.
You know, it's just really heartwarming.
Yes, yes. It's my experience as well. Dave, we're going to take a quick sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right, good.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Dave, we have four more callers here.
All right, let's go.
Yeah, next caller, you are now live on the air. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hey, this is Emily calling from the Grand Canyon.
Hey, Emily. The Grand
Canyon.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, Dave. It's nice to hear your voice again.
I was at the
May retreat, and I just wanted to tell you that I almost just hung up the phone before I came on because I had a voice really loud say, "I don't want to do this."
Uh-huh.
And you know what's really interesting is I wanted to say that I had wanted to call in for the past 2 months, so it's really interesting that that happened because what I was going to talk about was I kind of just, like after the retreat, I was really into the practice. I had like my own practice for like 2 months. I would meditate and I listened to the radio show religiously, and then I just really kind of just, I don't know, just fell off of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, I don't know, just like a week ago, I just kind of like woke up and was like, I don't want to live like this.
Wow, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was really amazing. And what was also really interesting was like a really small thing happened, and the content is not important, as I realize now, but someone kind of like made a judgment about me. And then the self-hate just came in like louder than I remember it ever being. Like, I would just have this conversation come up over and over in my head. And finally, I just remembered that I could just drop out of it and come back to the breath.
Isn't that amazing?
Isn't that amazing? Like,
it
I remembered
really
that.
Yeah,
and
but
then,
it's great because, you know, once you have an experience like that, it never goes away, that possibility. It gets kind of lost, it seems like. You know, it kind of ends up feeling like it's way off the distance, or we just forget it's even there. But, you know, it's like it's floating around. And a lot of times we remember when it gets so bad. You know, it's almost like the self-hate kind of goes too far. You know, it's just it's so violent that we start looking around in places we don't know we're looking, and suddenly, ding, there it is. Like, oh, yeah, I know what to do about this. I know how to let this go and move to a place of peace.
Yeah, and you know, the most interesting was I started doing that, and then like after a day of doing that, like when I'd come back to the breath, a voice would say, "This is too hard.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to do this." And then it just dawned on me that I need to. This is part of the process of going unconscious. This is what happens when I go unconscious. Is
go. Uh-huh.
A voice says, "This practice is too hard," which is a lie because the conversation is the hard part. That's the hard part to take, you know.
Yeah.
Actually, back to the breath. It's the conversation that drives me crazy, you know.
Yes, being present isn't hard, is it? Being present is kind of wonderful. I mean, who wouldn't want it? But having to deal with self-hate and conditioning all the time, oh, God, that's brutal.
Oh, I know. And I just realized that this is the process I'm looking at of going unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened after the monastery. And I could see, I don't know, like just a little piece of the puzzle. And I think that's really cool. And it's funny that it just happened now when I called. It was like, hang up, I don't want to do this.
Yeah, you can tell from that conditioning really isn't very intelligent. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it really knew what it was doing, it wouldn't have said that because it wouldn't say anything to you right now. It would just kind of hush and hope that you just kind of eventually fall back to sleep because you're watching it and you're really onto that process. And so every time it does it and you see it, it becomes more and more revealed to you, and you see more and more what's actually going on.
Yeah, and I think you know, when I just feel like there's been a lot of, you know, I felt like, you know, for the last couple months I've just been very unconscious, and I just haven't been present at all, and I feel like there's just been so much resistance, you know, just the resistance to everything, and it comes in, like, subtle ways, you know, like, I'm too tired to do this.
Yep.
Or I don't want to do this.
Well, I think what you said a minute ago is really the best line. It's just, this is a part of the process of ending suffering.
Yeah.
Even that, even the resistance, even the going unconscious, because it is, you know, that's what everybody faces. You know, you come on retreat or through whatever kind of, you practicing or through whatever kind of experience you have that kind of wakes you up to the possibility of ending suffering. You know, you have an experience where you sort of see that possibility, and then, you know, that kind of experience can guide you for the rest of your life. But it's not like it's the end of the program. You know, the
yeah.
next thing that happens is doing all of the work where you, as you say, kind of see one little bit at a time all the ways that conditioning has to take you out of the moment and cause you to suffer.
Yeah, and so I had this plan of what I was going to try to...
You have 2 minutes left on this call.
So loud this week was because I was looking right at it.
Uh-huh.
And that's why it got really loud, and that's why we went into the process. Now I can see the process of I look at self-hate, it gets loud, then it says, oh, this is hard, maybe stop practicing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and now I see that. So I was thinking that maybe I should, and I know this is like already something that people have said, but I'm just, whatever voice comes up, I am going to question it.
There you go.
Immediately.
Yeah, because of course you know what's going to happen next, right? It's, you know, it's going to stop with its current campaign because you're on it.
And another one.
It's going to think of another one.
Well, because you know what? The second I said that to you, a voice said, maybe you shouldn't do that. And I thought, I'm going to question that voice too.
There you go. Yeah. Boy, well, that is the key to happiness.
You yeah. know,
it really is. I mean, people, you know, that sounds kind of absurd. In a lot of circles, but it really is just to question everything that's going on in your mind, because it's all just—it's all a part of the program that conditioning's got going to cause you to suffer. It really is.
Yeah. So
I
don't know. Yeah, and you know the funny thing is that, you know, this process—I mean, looking at your process, like all of the processes that happen, it's fun and. Especially when you make discoveries and,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just, I mean, and it's just so funny, like self-hate just immediately takes that away from you and it's like, nope, it's not fun.
No, it's not fun. This is hard. This is serious business here. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is fun. It's fun to be present, isn't it? It's fun to be, like you said, be discovering things about yourself. I mean, that's about as good as it gets. You know, I when I was a kid, I remember when I finally got it, that pretty much every place on the planet had been discovered. I was kind of disappointed.
I'm sorry. You have exceeded your time limit on this call. Sorry, we cannot process your call at the moment. Please try again later.
Dave, are you there?
Hey, Michael, are you there?
I'm here. Are you there?
Yeah, I got kicked off the call for some reason.
Oh, that's unusual.
Is Emily still there?
Emily is not still here.
Oh, okay. Oh, well.
Yeah, maybe she'll call back.
Maybe she'll call back, yeah. It was fun talking to her, though. It was interesting that she called right then because, you know, she's a perfect example of what we're talking about before. You know, somebody who's participated with us and just off there, in her case, in the Grand Canyon, doing practice and having just enormous success with it. It's really, really fun to hear.
Yes, yes. I remember, I think it was about a month or so ago, we've had a couple woman in Korea who's called a couple times.
Uh-huh, yep.
And I always have this experience of looking at the globe and seeing these little lights all around the globe, people practicing. Because, as you know, conditioning will tell me that I'm the only one practicing and you know how crazy it is and how
mm-hmm.
impossible it is and the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
And we have evidence week after week after week after week that is not so.
Yeah, especially it was fun hearing Emily talk about how fun it is because, boy, is that a good reminder, you know, that it really isn't serious business. You know, it seems like it a lot of times, and conditioning has a lot of investment in making it seem like a, you know, sort of a life and death sort of a thing. And in a way, you could say it is a life and death sort of a thing because this is my life that I'm playing with here,
yes.
and I'm attempting to give my life to me
yes.
through this practice. But at the same time, it's not the kind of serious that is a condition sort of serious, like, you know, it's grim and hard and you got to really just kind of dig in and push and it's going to be horrible. you know, it's a kind of serious where, an adventure is serious.
Yes. Yes. Interesting. Yeah, that perspective is always so helpful because, you know, when I'm in condition serious, that's how it is. It's just serious.
Yeah, and then to get a reminder from somebody about how much fun it can be, it's just really helpful for all of us, I think.
Yeah, indeed. Dave, we have three more callers here.
Okay, great.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lisa from Seattle.
Hey, Lisa.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Michael.
You have 2 minutes left on this call.
Reasons. And the first thing is that I just made a commitment to call.
All right, good.
Once a month. So it's part of my 2009, one of my tools.
That you're going to call in once a month no matter what.
Yep,
no matter
even
what,
if
what
I have
say.
Nothing to say.
Uh-huh.
Or if someone convinces me I have nothing to say. So, and the other reason I wanted to call is just there's a lot of fear around calling.
Uh-huh.
And one other thing, I was just at that wonderful retreat that you guys were talking about.
Uh-huh.
So it was really good to see you, even though you weren't there for most of the time.
Even when I wasn't there, I wasn't.
You weren't really around, but that's
yeah,
okay.
They wouldn't let me work. Did you notice that? They wouldn't let me do anything.
I know.
I just had to sit there.
I know. Imagine sitting at a retreat. Anyway, but Sherry talked at one point. I'd asked a question, and she talked about kind of going on the offensive. With conditioning, rather than just and you mentioned this one earlier, rather than kind of adjusting your circumstances to fit whatever fear you're having or whatever uncomfortable circumstances.
Uh-huh.
And so I've really been attempting to do that and at the retreat and then also being home. And what I found is that I was able to see some things and attack it right away, and then conditioning shifted and changed how it works.
Yep, that's the game we play.
But it was instant, and I didn't get it at first. I didn't see the shift.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was getting, you know, when I was getting the voices, the obvious voices, I was really able to see those and go on the offensive and work with that.
Uh-huh.
But then it got really subtle, and I wasn't getting voices.
Mm-hmm.
What started right away, even before I left the retreat, was daydreams.
Sorry about that. I keep getting bumped off a call. I don't know why.
I don't know why either.
I changed phones, though, so maybe this time it'll work out a little bit better.
Okay, great.
Is Lisa still there?
We seem to have lost Lisa as well.
Oh, it was going so well.
It was going well. Seems to be taking you and the caller.
Oh, each time, huh.
That's
interesting.
Well, two episodes.
What do you think we should do?
I think we have. I think we should continue. I have two callers left in the queue here.
All right.
Let me do one quick sponsor ad here, and then we'll get to them.
Okay. Super.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful, simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life, what a life, what a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
I sure do love it. I sure.
Welcome back to Open Air. Dave, I see another caller from Washington here. So that's Lisa.
Oh, that would be great. Let's try.
Okay. Lisa, are you there?
I am.
All right. Way to go.
Hi. Oh, I'm glad I got back on, because the last time I called and talked with Sherry, I got kicked off.
Oh, it must be you then, huh?
I don't know. The same thing happened to me last time as happened to the previous caller from the Grand Canyon.
Yep.
The same messages and everything was coming through.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what it is.
I don't know either.
And I don't know how long I talked before, and you guys weren't even hearing me.
What I remember is you're talking about kind of going on the offensive with conditioning, which I take to mean is you see it for what it is, and you're just not going to believe it.
And yeah,
and what
I can...
you notice is it's doing a little shape shifting on you, where it was hitting you with stuff that was kind of obvious, but you caught on to that, and then it got a little more subtle, and it didn't seem like there was any voices.
Right. Yeah, and I don't. Right now, I just have this general feeling of irritation and frustration at everything, and it hasn't really seemed like there's anything to go on the offensive with.
Okay, well,
and I'm not
one,
really sure how to do that.
Here's one little clue for you. There's always a voice.
I guess I'm not hearing it.
Yep, that's very likely.
Now.
You know,
so
that's how conditioning causes us to be unconscious to it. Is, you know, it the way that it hides itself is that it says that it's us. You know, the voice says, well, this is you. You know, it actually says, this is me. So when it's talking, we can't hear it because we think that we are it. Do you know what I mean? It's like
Yeah. It's
so close you can't actually see it.
And that's how it feels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there's no voice, you know, to be hearing. I'm not getting a you voice, which is now quite obvious to me.
Mm-hmm.
No, you should do, especially at the retreat. I mean, it was a great experience of you know, conditioning getting stupid.
Yeah.
It was really wonderful to see these crazy things that it was telling me, which at a silent retreat just couldn't be happening.
Yeah, they
all
don't.
The things that these people were thinking about me, and nobody knew me, and nobody was looking at me, so how could they know?
Yeah, that's one of the great
right.
things about being on
it
retreat.
Was great.
It just becomes so obviously absurd.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, even with this, there's a voice. Now, you can't hear it because you believe it. That's really a more concise way of saying
mm-hmm.
it than saying a minute ago,
mm-hmm.
and which is fine. I mean, that's just what happens. We suffer because, in some way, conditioning is laying out a program to us in our minds that we believe. That's just basically how it does it. But you know that if you know that it's happening in language in some form in your mind, then you can be looking for it, and I bet you before too long you'll see what it is.
Any suggestions for specific tools or things I can do that might help with that?
Yeah, there is.
Okay.
So you said you're calling your experience now frustration?
Yeah, frustration and irritation at pretty much everything around me.
Okay. Do you have a sense of where you feel that in your body?
Mostly in my solar plexus.
Solar plexus, okay. Do you have a? Have you looked kind of to see sort of how the energy moves with that? You know, just kind of what happens down there and how it moves all around.
I haven't really looked at that. It seems right. Just what comes to my mind is just a feeling of heaviness and sluggish.
Kind of a heaviness, sluggish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, here's the little trick. There's a lot of little tricks, but here's a good one, and this is one of my favorites. See if you can bring your attention back to that sensation when it's happening.
Okay.
Because what the reason for that is, the reason that you can't see what's going on, like we said, is because you believe it. In other words, you're thinking it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking it, believing that it's true, and so it's like it's just right behind your eyeballs. You can tell that it's doing something because you're having a really lousy time.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is, so, you know, conditioning is back there cooking stuff up, you know, doing what it's doing, and then the system reacts. You know, so you feel that in your solar plexus, you feel that kind of heaviness. If you can bring your attention to those sensations and just kind of write down in your body, what that will do, at least potentially, is bring your attention out of conditioned mind and into the present.
Okay.
You see what I mean?
Yep, I can do that.
And so just you don't want to approach it like this is actually not a good place to kind of go on the offensive, except in the sense of just having a lot of determination to keep bringing your attention back over and over and over again to those sensations.
Okay.
But
just
go ahead.
Just notice where I feel the sensation and what the sensation feels like.
Yeah. Well, probably what you'll be noticing is you won't have your attention on the sensation. Your attention will be somewhere else, and it's the somewhere else that you're trying to catch on to. There's some kind of a story that goes along with frustration and irritation.
Okay.
Right? Now, you're not sure what that is because you're
right.
believing the story, but there's an imaginary world being created out there that you're participating in, and you participate in that through your attention. If you bring your attention back to sort of the impact of that, you know, the place in the body where that seems to be happening, it's like you're bringing it back to the source, you know, kind of the place where that story launches off from. And that's the very best place in the world to actually see it where as it's being created.
Okay. Okay, I can try that.
Yeah, what do you think?
I think I can look at that. I think that sounds doable.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll give me something to report back on.
Yeah, for sure.
Give me that reason to call, even if I don't have one.
Exactly, yeah, next month. Yeah.
Right.
It's one of my
favorite
things about the practice, just because it is so simple that, you know, there really is nothing going on in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
But the conditioning has to interact with us through a mental process. So it has to throw thoughts our way and tell stories and speak and stuff like that. It makes it all really clear because, you know, none of that's actually happening right here. So if we can bring our attention back here to what is actually happening right here, then then suddenly we put ourselves in a position to see the story.
One of the things that I've been dealing with that is, you know, knowing that I'm in conditioning and kind of wanting to find my way back when I'm having these feelings is kind of a, I mean, I guess it's resistance, but really in some way not wanting to let go of that suffering, not wanting to, I don't know, maybe not wanting to get out of it.
Yeah, sure, yeah. It's a difference between you and conditioned mind.
Mm-hmm.
Your conditioned mind has no interest in losing that. You know, it lives in suffering. But, you know, what you want for yourself, obviously, is not that. And that really is what we're trying to discover for ourselves in the practice. It's the difference between me, who I authentically am. You know, people talk about it like it's the heart. And what my heart is, as opposed to what conditioned mind is. Because conditioned mind has no interest at all in ending suffering. Well, you know, that's the last thing in the world that it wants.
Right.
And that could even be, you know, you could look at that as being a part, possibly, of the story that's keeping you out of the place you want to be.
The kind of the part that wanting to suffer?
Could be.
Keeping me, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or it also could be, there's, you know, this would be a very clever trick if this is what conditioning is doing. You know, you go on the offensive, you become somebody to do that. In other words, you become a part of conditioning to do that, and then... Mm-hmm. Suddenly, now you're a somebody again. You're somebody who's doing practice going on the offensive, and then that's the thing you can't see.
Oh, so it's using the offensive thing against me.
I don't know that that's the case, but
maybe.
it's the kind of thing that it does.
Right. Hard to know, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is until we see it. And then if, you know, just kind of, you know, now that you had a kind of a fun tax you were taking and you've sort of run around a little bit, and so now just kind of letting that go a little bit and just settling in, going back to the most basic practice, like we were talking about earlier, is bringing the attention back to the moment, and in particular to those sensations that are happening, then I bet you anything it won't be long before you just suddenly go, oh, there it is. Of course, that's what's going on. You know, that's the story that I'm believing that's keeping me out of it. And then you can go on the offensive again.
Okay. Well, that's something I can do.
Cool. Good.
Great.
Sounds
thank
fun.
You very much, Dave.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
Okay, thanks, Michael. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Lisa. You're listening to Open Air. Dave, we have about 7 minutes left, and we have two callers here.
Okay.
So we'll see where we get to, and if we don't get to the second caller, we'll invite them to call back early next week.
Okay, good.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Trish from Chico, California.
Hey, Trish.
Hi, Dave. So good to hear your voice.
And you likewise.
Thanks. It's been a really, really intense holiday season for me. I've been practicing, I guess, about 6 or 7 years, and I've noticed that a lot of things, or several things in my life have changed significantly. The abuse that I used to give myself about my work and not being good enough and not being adequate has really decreased a lot.
Wow, congratulations. That's really wonderful to hear.
It is. However...
There's always the next step, isn't there?
Yeah. I've been in a relationship for over 30 years, and it seems that the more I practice, and my partner has mentioned this to me several times, and it came to a head the day after Christmas. I mean, to the point where she basically said she, you know, she didn't want to be in a relationship with me. And what's happening is just constant judgment on my part, with a lot of little things that she does.
And, before or after she told you she wanted a change?
No, no, she, before. I mean, been going on for years. And
Is this the thing she had commented on?
Yes.
I got it. Gotcha.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just, I mean, I've looked at it. I know that I'm doing it, and yet there's a part of me, self-hate, I know, projected outward, I'm guessing, that just is, you know, constantly judging.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what it does. And probably judging you too, don't you think?
I think so. Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of judgment about my judgment.
Yep. And there's always it's easier. It seems easier in some ways to judge outwardly, you know, because it doesn't seem like it's so focused on us.
Yeah.
But really it's the same thing. You know, it's the old story of the Buddha, you know, what the Buddha said is, you know, you pick up a hot coal to throw at somebody, you know, you're the one who gets burned. It's a lot more subtle when it seems like when it's an outside person, but really, you know, the damage is being done inside.
Yes. And I really got that. With the help of some wonderful guidance, I have to put a plug in for the Still Point and Chico and Bill and Nancy. I mean,
yeah, they're great folks.
Oh, just incredible. But I know that it's hurting me as well. And I've looked at that, and I've looked at the person, the little person that's getting stuck with, you know, feeling just horribly sad and horribly in pain about the damage that I've done to this wonderful person that I live with. I mean, just
wonderful person. It's the obvious place to go, but boy, is that is an area that's just ripe for suffering.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the place where the judgment turns inward, isn't it?
Right. How can you do this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
So what I get as I hear you is that, you know, really it doesn't have anything to do with you. I mean, you're not judging either one of you.
I'm not getting you.
Mm-hmm. It seems like you are because that's a big part of the story that caused
right.
you to suffer. But, you know, I mean, you're not doing that. I mean, you wouldn't, if I were to ask you, is this something you want to be doing? What would you say?
No.
No, of course not. Is it, you know, do you, is this, you know, do you wake up every morning with the intention to cause as much damage as you possibly can to your relationship?
No.
Probably not. You know, there is this thing, and, you know, nobody can really explain why, but it's what we've got. There's this thing that we call conditioned mind, specifically, in what we're talking about, we call it self-hatred, that exists within you and uses your intelligence, it even uses, like, your eyes and your hands.
Mm-hmm.
To act itself out in your mind and also in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, to me, it's so helpful to look at it in that way because it takes the opportunity for self-blame out of it. You know, this has nothing to do with you. I mean, it's self-hate is judging. conditioned mind is judging. Both you and your partner are the victims of that, not just your partner.
Yes, yes. And I've gotten, I think I have gotten a sense of that. I've been able to find some compassion for the open, who I call the open-hearted little person who just doesn't want to live this way and doesn't want to wreak havoc. And I've just found more open-heartedness towards myself and towards my partner in such a way that I feel like we've been closer in the past week than we have in years and years and years and years.
Yeah, that's great. That really is, that's neat. It's the power of it that comes from paying attention, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's just so... It's so helpful to see that, you know, the outside and the inside are the same. You know, the outside, most of us become adults living in a world of intense brutality. Inside, most people don't recognize that, but it's, I think, probably at least everybody I've ever run across, that's very much the case.
Mm-hmm.
We're all just suffering deeply with self-hatred. And because of that, that's the world we live in, and that's the world we see outside of ourselves, and that's also what we perpetrate, both inside and outside. But to do, I mean, it's a noble work, you know, to find the willingness to face that and start to take that apart and let yourself off the hook, which is the hardest part of all for a lot of us, you know, to just realize that, you know, the blaming doesn't help. You know, the blaming is not, it's just a part of the whole thing. And then seeing the possibility that comes with that of living, instead of living in a world inside that is where I'm hated and I'm judged all the time, I never measure up, and so I'm projecting that outward and acting that outward, instead of living in a world where, you know, hey, there's somebody who loves me here.
Mm-hmm.
That somebody is not the outside person, even though the outside person might also love me very much, but it's this compassion that is also there just as much as the conditioning is. We have that just as much as we have, and more, as the conditioning that we're sort of forced into as we grow up.
Yeah. But, you know, I also feel like I did, and I feel like I do need to take responsibility for being so unkind. I mean,
well, you got to be careful with that. I mean,
okay.
I would agree with you as far as you need to take responsibility to the best extent you can.
Mm-hmm.
With a tremendous amount of kindness and understanding and compassion for the conditioning that exists inside your own mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only place you can make a difference. When you start to get into stuff about the outside,
mm-hmm.
it just makes such a big doorway for self-hatred.
Yeah.
You know, for like with your partner, I mean, it's a tough go. I mean, nobody wants this answer, but, you know, she is going to have to, she'll have to make a decision about this on her own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she can decide to do the work that you're doing, and in her suffering in this situation, and find that part of her inside who is suffering with this and really wants to be something different. She might decide to do that. She might not.
Mm-hmm.
But that's her job.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know?
Yeah.
That really is not your responsibility at all. Just in the same way as what you have done in your relationship with her, what you've sort of perpetrated on her, you can't even really say that you did that. You know, it was conditioning acting out through you. So it's a hard answer, but really that's the only thing any of us can do, is to attempt to take responsibility by paying attention with as much compassion as we can to the conditioning that is inside our minds, and then to the degree that we are willing and able to do, let that go and move to a different place inside.
Well, I've definitely seen what I'm up against,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, just loud and clear. How brutal it is,
yeah,
and how relentless it is.
Absolutely.
And I, Sherry says, you know, tells the story of the Buddha saying that, you know, you have to find your own salvation. I've forgotten the word now, but but you have
to seek our own salvation diligently.
Yeah. I mean, moment to moment. I mean,
yep.
That's
the job. As far as I can tell, that's the job we're here to do. Every one of us.
Yeah.
And I think we're just about out of time. But
okay.
The key always is compassion. You know, that's the center of the whole thing, and kindness, because that's what unravels it. Not being the right person, not doing it right, like in your relationship with your partner, not being the right person to her all the time, that gets you nowhere but self-hatred.
Mm-hmm.
But really, kindness to you, no matter what you do, no matter what you say, no matter how unskillful it seems to you at the time, that the number one thing is kindness, because that's the thing that will undo the self-hatred. The self-hatred that is actually causing all of this.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, and thanks for the good work you're doing.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
Thanks, Michael. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us, Trish. You're listening to Open Air. Dave, that was very inspiring to me.
Yeah, it was to me, too.
Yeah.
It really is. It really is fantastic. It's it works. It's a good deal. It works.
It works. It's a good deal. It's a courageous, heroic path, and I'm grateful for everyone who shows the way.
Yeah, me too.
And thank you for showing us the way today.
Thank you too, Michael. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
We'll do it again soon, huh?
We'll do it again soon.
Okay.
Thank you, Dave.
Okay, take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.